Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th day of December, Anno Domini 2025. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, ooh, early today, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. For your ratification and delectation, here comes the news.
And Friday the 13th is on a Saturday this month.
Google and Apple have long existed as polar opposites, each ruling over their tech kingdoms with little interest in cooperation. But the latest build of Android's Canary operating system hints at an unusual instance of collaboration between the brands, with a new feature that seems aimed at making data transfer simpler between Android and iOS mobile devices during the setup phase. Normally, we here at Soundbites don't report on rumors, but this one was confirmed by a Google representative, although they didn't provide any additional details on how the transfer would work. Each brand already has their own dedicated switch to Android and switch to iOS apps for making the swap between ecosystems, but making the transition easier at the operating system level and adding support for moving more types of data certainly sounds promising. Of course, features can go through a fair bit of iteration between the dev betas and the final launch, and Android Canary is a very early stage of development, so we'll be curious to see what actually arrives on our smartphones. Switching from iPhone to Android can bring a host of problems, or the other way around. Things like ecosystem integration, Apple Watch, HomePods, notification management, potential text message issues, green bubbles. A steeper learning curve with settings and customization, fragmented app experiences, you know, health, AI, things like that, and variable software update consistency. Going from Android to iPhone can raise similar issues like difficulty transferring WhatsApp chats, adjusting to iOS's different navigation. For example, there's no universal back button, limited customization, no multi-copy, less home screen freedom, and file transfer hurdles without a Mac. In either direction, changing to a new UI can be challenging, but having both companies work to bring over more of your data easier can only be a good thing for the community at large. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google and Apple partner on better Android iPhone switching, and your choices are excellent. Wish that it happened sooner. Who wants to change their phone ecosystem? You'll pry my landline from my cold, dead hands. And one other choice. I'm not sure if I should mention it. There's like there's a whole bunch of ham radio heads who listen to this show now. I'm sure there's at least one of them who can call in and tell us what that means.
I saw a necklace with that on it for sale.
Not with that. Oh, maybe. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Sure. Why not?
I didn't translate it yet. I just assumed what it was.
Yeah, I know. So far, there are 18 votes. Who wants to change their phone ecosystem is about half of them, and that's about right. And, of course, you can vote in the poll. It's very easy. Head on over to soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And vote right there in the poll. Also, there you will see how to make contact with us. It's really simple. All you have to do is give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415.
And we don't require Morse code.
And we don't require Morse. In fact, we don't want Morse code.
That isn't the one I saw for sale.
Oh, okay.
That only had two words.
Yeah, this is four. I use the convention of a slash between words. I know that's controversial.
Yeah, some folks. Well, it
in
helps
the community.
Some folks, yeah.
How do you know if it's a space between a letter or a space between a word? By how long you wait, right?
Well, there's a slight pause when you're doing the code. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, literally, you get some ham operators, and they can do, you know, like 30 words a minute.
Yeah.
And I mean, you got to really tune into your, you know, acute hearing to, you know, separate the dots, the dashes, and form the letters. That's what you're focusing on, really, is not the word, the letters. The letters will form the word in your brain as you translate.
Right, right, right. And those, you know, those were the days. Those were the days that...
Yeah.
But back to the news story, the European Commission is... taking all the credit for forcing Apple and Google to do this because of their new laws.
Yeah. And it is, I have to say, I don't think it's tremendously important because very few people, at least as we can see in our own poll this week, very few people move ecosystems.
I switched my daughter from Android to iPhone. Last year, she got an iPhone at Christmas time, returned it because she didn't like it. This year, she's going to try again.
Okay.
All right. So, someone from the carrier sent a person to the house to help her do the switch.
Wow.
That shocked me. He couldn't do it. Took him 3 hours, and he gave up. So, I get there. I download the Move app, and starts right away.
Yes. But
then her battery died.
Of course it did.
So, and she's scrambling around trying to find a high wattage charger. All she could find was 5-watt chargers.
Uh-huh.
I had a 10-watt in the car, but the newer phones, you can use a 30 or 40-watt charger now to do fast charging. Get half a charge in 20 minutes or something like that with a fast charger. So all those really old phone charger bricks are usually only 5 watts, sometimes 10. And people would get their phones and their tablet chargings backwards. So the tablet charger did a phone really fast, but the phone charger did a tablet really, really, really slow.
I almost plugged my laptop charger into my phone yesterday. My laptop charger is 65 watts.
Yep.
That might be a little much.
Mine is 67.
Yeah.
They have a 96, and they have 140 for super fast charging.
Yeah. I don't think either one of those is good for a phone.
Just one key thing. Once that magic smoke comes out, you can't put it back in.
What?
Yeah.
I have a dust buster. I've been sucking it up.
Nope.
No? Okay.
So I gave in and updated my OS this week after testing OBS on OS 26. So I did the 26.1, and then the next day they come out with 26.2.
Of course they did.
But it appears that it's doing an automatic bokeh blur.
Yeah, you got disconnected.
Because it's an automatic what?
Blur. Because it's blurring the microphone letters. It's blurring his computer screens. It's blurring my microphone letters.
Interesting.
So it's blurring stuff, or it's... I would say it's the camera, but that's three separate cameras.
Right.
So it's blurring the background, but I didn't have any of that turned on, so it must automatically do it now.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, we'll see what it looks like.
I wouldn't mind it leaving the Jazz logo on there, but it doesn't need to show Dave's computer screens.
Right. No. All right, to the phones. Our first caller this week is Jack from Gates, New York. What's up, Jack?
On some of my different web accounts, just for example, CVS. You know, I have it set up for two-factor authentication.
Sure.
And then I continually get these pop-ups that are saying, oh, do you want a PIN instead? Do you want a passkey instead? Do you want a biometric thing instead? Are those things really necessary? Are they really giving you anything more than I'm getting out of the two-factor authentication where they send a code to my phone or they ring my phone or send an email or something?
It's theoretically more convenient.
Well, and theoretically more secure.
Theoretically.
Text messaging and email are not secure. Anyone can read those messages along the way. And if you are a targeted person, a investigative journalist or an activist, then it's very easy for someone to get access to your text messages. So setting a passkey using the biometrics is a little harder to do. They have to physically get your phone then.
Or using the... Authenticator apps.
Authenticator apps, those are secure communication channels.
Could you speak more about the convenience aspect? Why? What makes them more convenient?
Well, it depends on what you've got. So let's say they want you to use a PIN. That's already in your head. You just type it in. You don't have to get out your phone. All of these assume you don't have to get out your phone.
But would the PIN be unique for all of these different sites? So I'd have to memorize different PINs for all the different sites?
Yes, if you wanted to, yes, and that would be the safest thing to do. That's why they also suggest...
And lose the convenience factor then.
Right, then you lose the convenience factor for that. So that's why they suggest things like biometrics, whereas if you've got, for example, a fingerprint reader on your computer, you would be able to say, I want to use the fingerprint reader, and then when it comes up and asks for verification, you just put your finger down on it, you're in.
I've had a customer this week. We set up his new phone. We set up his Face ID, and he calls a couple of days later and says, it never asked me for my Face ID. So, yes, every time you pick up the phone, it looked at your face and logged you in faster than you thought that
right.
was doing.
Right.
So that's how some of the biometrics work. You just look at your phone, and poof, it logs you in.
Right. So they are just alternatives. Some people do not carry their phone with them all the time. Some people do not want the, in your case, only slightly less secure fact of using a text message. Because, again, unless you're a targeted individual, the likelihood that they have your, that they are going through the trouble of capturing your text is very low.
How about the convenience of a passkey? Can you describe that, please?
It depends on what you mean by passkey.
Yeah.
There are physical passkeys like the YubiKey, Y-U-B-I, and that's a device you plug into one of your outlet ports, USB-A usually, and, I beg your pardon, and that has a code in it that changes every minute. And so if somebody were to steal that code 60 seconds at the most later, it would be useless.
Mm-hmm.
That is also the way authenticators work.
And it is an authenticator.
Right.
It's a hardware authenticator. And right. then the authenticator apps, like Google Authenticator, made that a little more convenient by putting it on your phone.
Right. So you take out your phone, you look at the number, and you then type in the number. I have more than once been in the position where I'm in the middle of typing in the number and it changes.
Yeah, if you're at 45 seconds, don't bother. Wait for it to tip over to the next code, yeah.
Right. But there's a little clock that tells you that.
Yeah.
But also, they have, Google in particular, has a thing where you'll try to do something and it'll say, go to your phone and tap this number, like 93 pops up. And you open up your phone and you get three numbers, one of which is 93. You tap on that and you're in. So those are just all multiple methods of two-factor authentication, which are theoretically more secure than a text message.
And then the more convenient passkey uses your phone. So either credit card or credit card fingerprint reader on your computer or your phone. So the website starts to log in, and it asks you to hold your phone up to the QR code, and then the phone looks at your biometrics and says, yeah, this is him, and then the website lets you in. So the biggest advantage of passkeys is there's no password for the other end to lose, because they always do. There are billions and billions of billions of leaked passwords. In fact, I've noticed if you make a new Microsoft account now, they don't even do passwords.
Right.
It's email loop or passkey only. Email loops are good, but email isn't secure either. If someone could easily get into your email from mm-hmm. a reused password.
Right? Yeah.
So your email password is very, very important to be long, strong, and unique.
Well, the most convenient one that I heard that you described is something like a fingerprint reader.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of an amateur handyman, so it's not unusual for me to have bandages on my fingers a lot.
Yep. And we see a lot of problems.
Bandage on your finger, and you want to use it. What happens? You just can't get into your finger here.
Well, you can put all 10 of your fingers.
Multiple fingers. But we also see now in the dry weather, dry skin changes the way your fingerprint works.
Right.
And if you put lotion on for your dry skin, it changes your fingerprint.
Right.
And then you'll fall back to your password.
Okay. So it's a password backup, basically.
Yeah.
I was going to say, use your pinky finger, because usually most handymen are using, you know, the first three fingers on each
That's right.
hand.
Yep.
So if you use a pinky finger, that usually is just as a guide I know, for at least for me, my woodworking. Yep.
There was an old episode of CSI where a bad guy cut all his fingerprints off and then glued them back on in random order. So in the episode, they got these weird fingerprints that didn't match anything. So they took them apart, put them back together, and found the right person. I'm thinking, cut your fingerprints off and leave them off.
At least leave them off, exactly right.
Yeah, you're going through that much pain.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks, guys. You gave me some other options there I could consider.
Yep.
There you go.
When Microsoft started doing their creative Windows PIN after your long password, they had this big thing about why a four-digit PIN is safe and secure.
It's not.
It's not. Mm-mm. There's only 10,000 possible combinations. You hire an intern.
Yeah.
And they try every possible combination. That's Apple's iPhone and Google Android used to be four-digit PINs, and they went to six-digit PINs.
I will say this, in the Microsoft app, you can set your PIN to be anything you want. Mine is nine characters,
right?
Alphanumeric, so not just numbers.
Numbers, yeah.
And on the iPhone, you can set it to alphanumeric, but then just use a four-digit PIN. For numbers, because there's no... So when the phone pops up and you see four digits in a number pad, you know it's going to be numbers.
Well, exactly.
So that's an information leak. So it should be an empty text box and an entire full keyboard.
Right. And the people who use a shape, a path that you trace, the problem is I can read those paths from across the room.
And I can see the fingerprint smudge on your phone.
Yeah, you can usually see. Yeah, if you put it just the right glare, you can see where they go.
There was a story once about an old a hack at ATMs in the winter. When you push your PIN on the ATM with a thermal camera, you can see the heat transfer to the PIN code, the PIN pad.
Yeah,
and so the hottest PIN is the last digit.
Yep.
And the coldest PIN is the first digit.
Exactly.
So someone from across the parking lot can watch you.
Mm-hmm.
So you cover the pad so no one can see you type, but then they read the heat afterwards.
One of the things that Google has said they are doing, and I don't think they've come out with this yet, but they've said that what they're planning is that every app that can will use biometrics.
Mm-hmm.
So, just about every major phone on the market has a fingerprint reader.
Yep.
And so, when for example, currently when I log into NPass, I can use my fingerprint on my phone. I can also do that for several other apps. Google has said they're going to extend that across all their major apps and talk to other companies about doing the same thing.
Mm.
Which again, the spy movie trope of cutting somebody's thumb off and carrying it around with you for a week. That's actually fairly safe.
Most of the PIN pads have a heat detector in it, so that only works for a little while.
Right. Unless you keep warming it up.
Yeah.
Or put it in, one of those little hand warmers.
That was on a different cop show. Someone had been burned, so they had to rehydrate the fingers, and the best way to do that was to put them on over his... At least he put them on over the medical glove.
Oh, there you go.
So to rehydrate it so they could get the fingerprints.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've known a couple of coroners in my time. They are different people.
Mm.
Unique, God bless each and every one of them.
They're a unique breed.
They're different people. But yeah, the reality is that we all tend to be a little too cavalier about security.
They don't have time for it. We're in too big of a hurry to slow down and protect our information. We'll be the first ones to bitch when it gets breached.
Most people don't think they have anything worth stealing. So there have been cases where people give up their password for an ice cream.
Yeah, or chocolate.
Or chocolate, yeah. And then when their identity gets stolen and somebody runs up credit card debt... they're mad. But then we've got laws about you're only liable for the first $50 of fraudulent credit card data, and most credit companies wipe that anyway. They just give you a new credit card.
Yeah.
So it's not much of a hassle anymore to have your credit card stolen.
Right.
In fact, sometimes a new one shows up in the mail, and I didn't even know there was a problem.
Right. I that happened to me. I told you this before. I got a phone call from my bank. I knew it was my bank because... it came up as my bank, and I had them in my contact list.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, did you just buy 6 fur coats in Florida? No, no, I did not. Okay, we're going to cancel your credit card. We're going to cancel that credit. And we will be sending you a new card. Yes, thank you very much.
So well, your wife and 5 mistresses?
Yeah, I bought all of them coats that year. And so, therefore, I got them free.
And you don't mix them up. Heaven forbid you give your mistress your wife's gifts. And
they were all the same coat. Yeah. So I didn't have to worry about a thing.
Yeah, that's one of the other features that a lot of the credit cards have added, is that when you do suspect, you know, fraud or something, or you might have left your credit card somewhere, you can go instantly, usually to that bank's website, sign in, and you can turn off your card.
Yep.
You can literally shut it down and turn it back on if you suspect.
I know people who leave their card off all the time until they're about to buy something.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they get on their phone, they turn it on, they buy something, they turn it off again.
Yep.
That may be a little excessive, but not necessarily. You know, I mean, I get it. I absolutely get it. I had my credit card stolen once. That was more than enough.
Mm.
Thank you very much. What really makes me angry is I had it memorized.
Yeah.
And now my brain will not memorize the new one because it knows someday it's going to change. And it I just cannot memorize the new one. Makes me angry. Of course, I don't use it anymore anyway. I use my watch for everything.
I read a story about a lady who was trying to use her debit card at a point of sale and couldn't remember her PIN, so it kept canceling out. And so she said, all right, let me run to the bank. She runs to the bank, comes back with cash. That's the same PIN you use at the ATM. Oh, no, I wrote my PIN on the wall next to the ATM.
All righty,
then. And a similar story where the bank was painting the walls, and she got mad that they painted over her PIN.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, Louie.
Speaking of paying with my watch, today I bought my breakfast with my watch, and the 18-year-old, maybe 16-year-old kid in the window said, I've never seen anybody pay with their watch. A, he must have seen people pay with their watches because doesn't everybody pay with their watch now? So B,
it's too many old people that don't pay with their watch.
B, this is the third time he's seen me pay with my watch.
That'd be a problem for me.
Yep.
I don't wear a watch.
Well, that's your problem.
No, but like Steve says, like most folks use the phone. I mean, everything, you know, I just pull out the phone, boom, tap it.
What I really love about this watch is that it is so convenient when I'm driving. Because mm-hmm. if I want to make a phone call, I can just, you know, say to my phone, and it makes the connection, and it makes the call, and I'm done. And if a text comes in, I can quickly look and see, okay, that's not somebody I care about. Or if it is, then I can pull over, you know, go into the driveway, whatever I'm going to do, and then look at the text. But it makes it so much more convenient.
Let's see. For me on the car, it's just hit one button.
Oh, because you have it in the car.
Yeah. And it'll come up on the screen and say, you know, voice command. And I just say, you know, call so-and-so. And then it dials it. And then when it's done, it hangs up.
My car's 16 years old. It's barely got an engine. Maybe I'll have another car soon.
There you go.
We'll see. But yeah, it's the biometrics are getting more sophisticated.
Oh,
and as we said with Jack, if you've got a laptop with a fingerprint reader, and if you don't, you can add a USB one.
Yeah.
By the way, they aren't very expensive. And it will work. I have a ThinkPad laptop with a fingerprint reader, and of course I put Linux on it. And just this week I discovered that how to make the fingerprint reader work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent about like half an hour closing the lid, opening it up to log in, logging in with the fingerprint, closing it.
One of the problems now is that with the deep fakes and AI face generation getting so common, there's a threat to Face ID. Most of the Face IDs now need a three-dimensional scan.
Right. It used to be you could hold up a picture of a person. In my case, you could hold up a picture of Santa Claus or that Dwyer psychiatrist guy.
I think Mythbusters did one where they were
Project
able
Black,
to do a Hollywood prosthetic mask of someone else, and that worked. But that 20-year-old biometrics now should be a lot better now.
You would think so. You would hope so.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been a long road, but biometrics are getting better and easier. We're also looking at voice activation stuff. Of course, you can hear my voice today. I don't know that if I had a voice activated computer, it would know who I am today as the
Brundlefly.
The who?
Brundlefly?
I don't know Brundlefly. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. That's right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are solely member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are speaking of changing in the middle of talking.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hey, first want to say I was talking to somebody about some computer stuff, and they asked me, how did you learn all this stuff? And I said, I listen to Sound Bites on WGMC, and oh, by the way, they'll accept your donation.
Thank you. Nice. Thank you. Perfect.
So, put a plug in. I'm hearing you talking about adding a fingerprint reader to your Linux machine. I have Linux Ubuntu 20404, and I want to get a thumb reading device that's USB. Process. I know it's a kind of a long question for on the air, but maybe even post a sequence of how to.
I would assume that there's a lot of YouTube videos.
Yeah, there are. Okay, so let me give you the short answer. It depends on which version of Linux you have, and it depends on what fingerprint reader you get. So do your research first. But what you would normally do is run a program like there's one called Thingwit. There's another one called fprintd for fingerprint daemon, and a couple of others that all do similar things. And what you would do is find the fingerprint reader you want. When you're doing that research, look for one that has a Linux driver already. Or that you do your research and say, okay, we know this one works with Linux. And then you load either the program, something like Thingwit, that's in Linux Mint. I do not think it's in Ubuntu 2404.
Can you spell that?
Fingwit.
What's more?
F-I-N-G, which is short for finger.
Yeah.
Wit, which is short for witness.
Oh, wit. Okay.
Yeah, Thingwit. But it is more likely you will need to use the fprintd program. This is where it gets a little complex. Depending on which device you get, you can either use the one that comes with your Ubuntu program with your Ubuntu system, or you have to download the replacement version from GitHub. And again, read the directions for the device you get, which should give you all the information you need. Do your research first and make sure you get the right one.
Yeah, I started to do that, and none of them really say works or doesn't work with at least what I saw. I'm only shopping Amazon, but what fingerprint reader does what? It's not really clear. That's why I was thinking if you had a process that you would put on your website, I could go through that and read it and reread it half a dozen times till I get it right.
Yeah. All right. I'll look into that. I'm not going to promise to do it quickly.
I'm seeing a bunch of software links for how to do it, but no hardware links about what to buy.
Yeah.
Well, here's one for the Kensington Reader. How old is this? 2 years ago. Sometimes that's too old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there is a way to do it. The way I did it, now I was using Ubuntu 24.04. Which one did you say you had?
24.04, Ubuntu, yeah.
Oh, no, I was using Linux Mint 22.2. And there's a thing, and it might be, let me look, what have I got, what am I running here, yeah. There's one called Open, there's fprintd, which is the dbus daemon for fingerprint reader. There's another one called Open fprintd. Oh, you have to add the repository. I'll put up something on one of my web pages about that.
Okay, that'd be great.
Not if I don't write it down. give me a minute here. You guys talk quietly amongst yourselves. I need to write this down.
Otherwise, yeah. It's one thing I found that I've got to do more and more. You know, if I go to do something or remind myself to do something, it's easier just to write it down because 10 seconds later, I'll usually forget because I get distracted and doing something else. And then you go back and it's like, what was I going to do? I know I came here or I started typing to do this or that. And, you know,
I do that all the time. I walk out to the kitchen to get something and I see something along the way that I need to do. And I go, oh, yeah, I got to take care of that. And then I go back to what I was doing and go, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's called CRS.
Yep. Absolutely.
But, you know, yeah. But, you know, it's part of age and that, but just find other tools to help you remember stuff because it's just a fact of life. And the fast pace.
For me, it's not age. It's been that way my entire life.
Yeah. Short-term
memory.
Well, with our lifestyles now, we got usually so much going on. You know, it's a lot faster pace. Then, you know, our parents, when they were growing up, you know, things were a lot slower and sort of set back, whereas now, boom, 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 you're constantly going, doing this and that. It's a far faster pace than previous.
Yep, absolutely.
So it's the way life is.
I find that I can remember formulas that I learned in high school, and I can't remember where I put my coffee cup.
Oh, please.
I'm wearing a T-shirt full of formulas today.
Yes, you are.
Let me stand up. Let me see it.
Let's see if I angle down a little.
Well, you're going off your screen.
Rocket equations. Yeah, they're too small. On the back is the answers to all the equations.
All right. Yeah, I'll put that up at some point this weekend, Fred.
All right. Sounds great.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Yep, bye-bye.
Take care.
I did an Amazon search and put Linux in the search key, and it found a couple of them that said Linux on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazon may not be the only place to look for those things. Newegg certainly has a bunch of stuff.
Well, I would think also the companies that are producing these readers would have some type of YouTube video or, you know, short shot to explain, you know, the procedure. Yeah, you know, granted, it might be different from one operating system to the other, but basically it's, you're doing the same stuff.
Well, the real problem is that in terms of the home user market, until recently, Linux was like 2%, 3%. Mm-hmm. It's up to about 5%. Now, a lot of that is Steam Decks. And Raspberry Pis.
Yep.
But it's growing, and people are beginning to pay more attention to it. But you don't have in many companies, you don't have the years of expertise in that you do in Windows.
Mm-hmm.
So I do understand it. And in a lot of companies, the hardware was designed for Linux, for Windows. And so when you, you know, for example, the ThinkPad that I've got, the fingerprint reader on, the standard way to install a fingerprint reader did not work. And I had to do some research to find the alternative method, which worked perfectly. And it quite literally was just a matter of, oh, copy and paste this step, copy and paste this step, copy and paste. But finding that process was not as easy as it could have been. But yeah, and so that's a done deal now. But yeah, you'll find that fingerprint readers, and you know, it's not science fiction anymore, but retinal readers aren't common. But fingerprint readers are getting much more common. And like I said, you can buy them to plug into your USB port so that you can very easily add biometrics to pretty much any system. And they come with your phone now. So, you know.
Lot of computers are starting to come with fingerprint readers built in, too.
And a lot of them are. The higher end ones, not necessarily the low end models. And certainly the business models as opposed to the desktop, home user rather, models. The one that I've got it on is definitely a business brand. So it's a fairly high-end ThinkPad, and it did have the fingerprint reader in it. And the first time I got it to work, I was just giddy. I admit it. I was giddy. Like I said, I spent, 15 minutes. Shutting it down, starting it up, using my finger. Shutting it down, starting it up, using my finger.
Just to make sure it works.
Just to make sure it worked. It was so cool. But that was that. All right. News. Okay, Microsoft news. This was the second Tuesday of the month, so Microsoft pushed their last Windows update of 2025. They fixed at least 56 security flaws in their Windows operating systems and supported software. They also tackled one of the zero-day bugs that is already being exploited, as well as two publicly disclosed vulnerabilities. Despite releasing a lower-than-normal number of security updates these past few months, Microsoft patched a whopping 1,129 vulnerabilities in 2025, an 11.9% increase from 2024.
And if you're not signed up for Windows Extended Security Updates, you haven't received the last 2 months.
Well, we'll get to that. Yes, you're right. This year marks the second consecutive year that Microsoft patched over 1,000 vulnerabilities and the third time it has done so since its inception. If you are running Windows 10 Enterprise LTSC or are enrolled in the ESU program, which Steve just mentioned, you can install the security portion of this update like normal by going into settings, clicking on Windows Update, manually performing a check for updates. Although, since this update is mandatory, it should automatically install and prompt you to restart your device when it's complete. As a reminder, Microsoft is no longer releasing new features for Windows 10, and your update contains only security updates and fixes for bugs introduced in previous security updates. Microsoft has fixed a known issue that causes bright white flashes when launching File Explorer in dark mode on Windows 11 systems after installing the optional update. The bug was also triggered when creating a new tab, selecting more details while copying files, toggling the detail pane on and off, or navigating to pretty much doing anything. Until this fix is rolled out, affected users could have only avoided getting flashbanged while using the File Explorer by switching off dark mode. With the December cumulative update, Microsoft fixed another known issue that caused network connectivity to be lost on virtual machines after external switches lose their physical network adapter or NIC or NIC bindings following a host restart. They also patched Windows PowerShell to warn when scripts use the invoke web request commandlet to download web content, helping prevent the execution of harmful code. They also fixed the issue where shell components, such as explorer.exe, start menu experience host, and shellhost.exe would crash with visible errors or fail silently, leaving users with partially functioning devices that couldn't display various navigation tools. So that's nice. Microsoft Outlook is not working for some users, which is a feature, and it's been a week since the problem first surfaced, which is a bug. The new Outlook app, which will soon replace the classic one, is not launching at all for Windows 11 users. The event viewer shows an error code and nothing happens after clicking the icon. I'm sure Microsoft will get around to fixing it soon for certain select values of soon. But we're here to answer other questions right now, so give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415. Just like Dwayne did from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dwayne?
Hi, guys. I had a problem. I solved it, and I just wanted to call up and identify the problem to you.
I love it when people solve their own problems.
Makes our work so much easier.
Okay, I have a friend. He has Windows 10 machine. He asked me to put Linux Mint side by side on his Windows 10 so he could learn Linux Mint. So I said, fine, I'll make the USB drive and I'll bring it over and we'll do it. So I got the Linux Mint ISO file. I verified the ISO against its checksum.
Good.
I have a Ubuntu machine, so I don't have Etcher on it. So I downloaded Etcher and installed the deb file, and I ran Etcher, and I pointed it to the ISO file, and Etcher said, there's a problem. Request metadata is not a function. So I said, okay, this is a useless error message to me, but I will Google this error message, and when I Googled the error message, I found that this is a common error message that is spits out of Etcher over, well, quite a period of time, including mentions of it on the GitHub website for Etcher. So there was a lot of suggestions about, did you try this, did you try that? And so finally someone said, you're running the most current Etcher, which is 2.1.4, and you know, I didn't find this problem when I ran the old one, 1.18.11. So I got rid of the Etcher that I installed, and I went back and I got the old Etcher and installed it. And I now have my USB drive all programmed, ready to go, because nice. The old Etcher did not show this problem.
Very interesting.
So, I'll give you, if you want to Google and find out a little bit more about this, if you Google GitHub space Etcher space 4150, it'll bring you to the GitHub report on this problem. GitHub space Etcher space 4150.
Excellent. Thanks.
Again, it looks like the error message is identifying a failure of a function call within Etcher.
Right.
Instead of something that's wrong with the file, because like I said, I had verified the ISO and it was clean against its downloadable checksum. So it's not an ISO failure, which I pretty much proved by being able to successfully make the USB drive with an old version of Etcher.
Good to know. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So if anyone calls in and said, hey, I'm trying to, you know, use Etcher like you guys on Soundbites, and I'm getting an error message, this will ring a bell, maybe.
Perfect. Thanks, Dwayne. We appreciate that.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too. This is why we've always called this the computer user group of the air, because we call in with our own help to each other. I love that. I love that. Sorry, go ahead.
I say most of the time it's not you. It's them. It's the other end.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm sure that will be fixed quite quickly. But yeah, these things crop up, and sometimes we find that we're the beta tester. That happens constantly in from Windows, but it happens in other programs too sometimes. Thank you. Oh, okay.
So you never know what's going to happen next.
I do, because I know who called in.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Al from Rochester, New York. What's up, my friend?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Who came in?
I've got something that's got me stumped here a little bit.
Uh-oh. If it stumped you...
Oh no! It means I have looked into it and tried to figure it out, but I think I'm almost not looking in the right direction. So here's the deal: Windows 11 24H2 wanted to go to 25H2, but the option to load 25H2 is not available under Windows Update. I get a message instead that says this setting isn't available due to your organization's policy. Now, I have a standalone PC, so there is no organization other than me. I've wandered through the web looking for answers and been into all the GP edit and registry changes and things, and nothing's gelling. So I'm a little puzzled. Did something might become valid or something?
Yeah.
A policy flag got set inadvertently somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been through erasing and deleting any policies that I've seen, which of which there were almost none.
Okay, so I will first give you the official Microsoft fix.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Download the Windows 25H2 ISO from the Microsoft website and install it.
Yeah.
So get the full installer, not the updater.
Well, the problem with that is, A, you better have a backup. One of the choices you can make is keep personal files and apps, but I don't trust it. But that is Microsoft's solution. It's the nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
Yeah, I saw that. It just, and as you acknowledge, it gives me the willies. I've
yeah.
got too much
mm-hmm.
of that.
The other way to do it is you go into the group policy editor, which can be tricky, too.
Yeah.
One thing you might want to try is GRC.com has a program called In Control.
Got it.
It's designed to prevent your computer from updating without you wanting it to. But you can also turn off prevent updating, so it will update. And that should set the policy editor to allow updating.
Yeah, good suggestion. Been there, tried that. Doesn't make any difference.
Hmm.
Okay, and you did try the registry change?
Yep, and the GP edit.
Okay, and you've done the real simple things, like you know you have enough disk space.
Yeah.
You've turned off your third-party antivirus.
Yep.
You've visited the Windows release health page for 25H2
yes.
in case your particular device has a specific hold on it somewhere.
Well,
have you done an anti-malware scan? Maybe something got in, and it's protecting itself from being deleted by adjusting your policies.
That concern did occur to me, though. Like I said, I've been through back and forth through all the areas for the policies, and there's nothing there. There's nothing standing in the way. So it's like I said, I am suspicious that some other program has gotten in there and changed something, but it's my last resort, which, hey, I've got lots of backups, I got to use them for something, is to step back a month and see if it reappears, and it's, you know, something happened in the last 30 days.
That's a good thought.
There are a bunch of websites on how to block the update. Check those and do the reverse. I'm posting one now, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it does sound like a GPO thing, and that's under software policies, Microsoft Windows, Windows Update.
Yeah.
Under HKLM. At this point, and you say you ran that program that tells you whether or not there's a problem, the one from Microsoft directly.
No.
Okay, there's a Windows release health page. Do you want to stay on the line?
Sure.
Okay, stay on the line. There's a Windows release health page, and I'll get Steve to post a link to it in just a minute. But that's the first hour of this show is done. We're going to take a slightly longer break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Al from Rochester, and you. But only if you give us a call and get in the queue, which there is a small one right now, at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free, 800-790-0415. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites. And we are right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that with your support, we are solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we still have Al from Rochester, New York on the line. Al, you still there?
Yep, and I've been busy.
Good.
So, just a quick question. When you're talking about a health check to validate whether 25H2 is I'm eligible or not, you're talking about a general health check or one specific to 25H2?
To 25H2, there is a particular release health page for version 25H2, and I think Steve has put up the link to it.
Yeah, I'm there now. Okay. Well, I did the general check just as a sideline, and it comes up with the same message. Your organization manages updates on this PC. Go away.
Interesting. So, I would like I said, I would do the standard things. I would make sure I've turned off. Thank you. I would make sure I've turned off my antivirus. I would and you know whatever other things you have running like that for the duration of the upgrade. And I would first I would reboot from a cold. I would shut the machine down and do a cold start,
yeah,
which is
sure.
Different from a reboot.
Sure.
Then one of the issues that I know that Windows has, Windows 11, is that the task manager continues to run in the background. So make sure it's shut down. And that might help. And then try to, you know, turn off all your anything running in the background, anything running in the background, and try to do the upgrade then. If that doesn't work, Microsoft's solution seems to be do the full run setup.exe, but make sure that you check keep personal files and apps.
Certainly.
Okay. But that's really, unfortunately...
Mm-hmm.
And I should also share with you that this jogged my memory, which is as old as it is, so it's a problem, but... About a month ago, I had a problem with a update 6881 that was not installing, and my solution then was to go back to an earlier backup and start over, and eventually I got it to load. But it was a couple days of chasing everything I could, and finally, actually, and this is a surprise, got a call from Microsoft saying, "Do you need help?"
Wow.
And I talked to a live person for about 45 minutes who ran me through the all the various steps of trying to get this to work. It didn't work, but there I was so impressed that I haven't gotten a call from Microsoft, or I haven't returned a call in, you know, the last 40 years.
Yeah, no kidding.
It actually happened. I spoke to a live person.
I'm a little shocked, but
yeah,
very
really.
Pleased for you.
Yeah. So, okay, well, I'll give those a whirl. And again, like you say, the worst case, I'll either go back to an earlier version.
Yeah, and the link that Steve posted is for known issues and notifications, but on the left is a list, a menu list, and the first item on there is the Windows Release Health link, which will give you more information about how to get it and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Let us know what you find.
Oh, I will certainly do that.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm sorry we weren't able to help him. That's, yeah. Somehow, the group policy got turned on.
Mm-hmm.
The GPO got turned on. Group policy option. And that's just...
Okay, hold on, sir.
Now he just has to figure out how to turn it off. And unfortunately, and, you know, we hate to say this, but the only way to really do that is in the registry. If his system... We see this problem with a lot of people who bought used computers on the open market, and they are still connected to some company somewhere.
Right.
And those we really can't help with.
The company should erase all their information before they sell it,
right.
But some don't. The broker should erase all the information before they resell it, and some don't.
Right.
And the customer gets a computer full of software, and they're happy until it doesn't work.
Well, exactly. That never bothered me because, as I've said more than 100 times, I'm only interested in putting Linux on it. So
yeah.
I'm just going to wipe it out anyway. I don't care if it boots or not.
Yeah.
But, yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is David from Leroy, New York, or Leroy, New York. I don't care. What's up, David?
Nor do I, so don't worry. good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
I recently replaced all of my mechanical HDD drives, hard drives, external, with nice, high-end, current state-of-the-art Crucial SSDs.
Nice.
So that I don't have to worry about power plugs anymore, and they're faster and they usually higher capacity. The problem is now that I do a search on my Mac, I have, five hard drive external drives connected in addition to my standard hard drive. I'm not finding anything. Nothing's indexed. And so I went and looked online, and Apple's solution isn't filling me with the hope. And I was just wondering, is this something that happens kind of on its own? Does it index data? Do you have to send it a command through the terminal or what?
Well, yes, sometimes you have to re-index your data. There's a GUI way to do it in the Spotlight system setting. You tell it not to index this drive, and then turn off don't index this drive so it starts an index.
Okay, so you turn it all off, then you turn it off and turn it on again.
Yep.
Got it.
That usually works. Otherwise, there is a terminal command that I never remember what it is, but there's a really great utility program called Onyx, and I'm going to post a link to them. And the Onyx runs all of the Unix maintenance scripts and cleaning scripts that the computer's supposed to do itself and sometimes doesn't. One of the things it can do is rebuild your index. And it's Onyx. It's Titanium Software out of France. And, of course, Onyx is such a generic term. Onyx, France... I'll get the link posted here in a second, and so that will delete your Spotlight index and build it again. Also, if you turn on Invisibles, you can delete the Spotlight index, which is an invisible file at the root of every directory, and then the next time, then reboot, and it will rebuild the Spotlight index as well.
I like your idea of using the software to do that rather than manually go through. The whole point of having all these extra external drives for me is just to keep things in order. I mean, yeah. I've migrated drives for probably 35 years. And, you know, I've got all kinds of things, and that's the whole point of it. So not being able to search anything is a real drag.
And the other real drag is that last week Micron announced that they're exiting from the consumer market and they're discontinuing the Crucial brand.
This makes me very sad.
Yeah, no more Crucial RAM, no more Crucial solid-state drives.
Wow. And they were my trusted source.
Yeah exactly.
After
you and me and 100 million other people.
Yeah.
But the problem is AI, as it is with so much these days. The AI infrastructure is taking up so much of everything, RAM, SSDs, everything, and they can charge so much more for the same stuff to an AI person than they can to an average user, that they don't make enough money selling to you.
I got you.
They would rather sell the same thing for twice or three times the cost to a company doing AI.
Okay, you've really made my day.
Yep.
yeah. Well, at least you got yours.
Yeah, you got yours first.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, well, thank you.
Warning, there are separate versions of Onyx for every version of the OS because all the command lines are slightly different. So make sure you get the right version for your Mac OS.
I will do that. And I will try with just one drive at a time that I know that I have the data on, let's say, my old mechanical hard drive.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that really helps me out. Thank you so much, guys. Have a great holiday.
Thanks. You too.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And I guess maybe one of the that's the word I want. The unexpected consequences of SSDs is they still fail about the same failure rate as hard drives, but they fail differently. Giant companies, Google, Backblaze, and others release hard drive reports because they buy hundreds of thousands of hard drives.
Right.
And 20% per year is the average failure rate.
The other thing about SSDs is the way they're designed, they prefer to be plugged in. They want power.
Mm-hmm.
So if you leave your SSD unplugged, so for example, if you take a standard HDD hard drive, a standard spinning hard drive, fill it up with data, stick it in a closet for 10 years, take it out again, it should work.
Yep.
You do that with an SSD, it likely will not work because it has lost all the memory. SSDs are great for current storage or storage where you have current in it, I suppose is the other way to put that. But long-term storage unpowered is not, it is not good for that.
Which is well, it's crazy because, well, an SSD holds a charge in a cell. And in order for the cell to be changed, you have to burn through the insulation around the cell.
Right.
And that's why they wear out. Even though there's no moving parts, you're burning through the insulation.
Yep.
But just sitting there, the charge can dissipate through the insulation over time.
Right.
Which is why you leave an SSD for too long, it will come back unreadable.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York again. What's up, Fred?
Hey, just wanted to comment, maybe help the caller a couple calls ago about the update on the Windows machine.
Yeah.
As you know, I don't like Windows.
Yeah.
But I have a Intel Nook that I bought new.
Nice.
And I use it for Windows for two programs that I use at work, two pieces of software. So I couldn't update for that same reason. I couldn't update to the 25 version. And I did is I backed up everything and figured, okay, well, if this doesn't work, you just became a nice Linux machine.
Right.
And it worked. I want to cross my fingers and say perfectly. But it was effortlessly worked just as Dave, Steve suggested, is downloading the EXE and running that as if it was a new install. I didn't have to pay anything. I didn't have to do anything. It just ran, which was absolutely amazing given the previous experience with the Windows.
Excellent. Just make sure you check keep current data and programs.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so what I did is, I figured even if that didn't work, even if that stuff didn't stay and I got back to new Windows, I could reinstall it.
Yeah.
Or I could just make it a Linux machine that would be really nice Linux machine with 32 gig of RAM and 2 terabyte hard drive.
There you go. Now you're talking.
Sometimes if you end up having a lot of problems with your computer, little niggly things that keep happening, it's back up your data, erase the drive, start clean, and that fixes a lot of problems, especially if you've been upgrading for year after year after year.
You get a lot of cruft in the registry.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I didn't have to wipe it. But I did do the download of the new version.
Nice.
Because I kept getting that same error and I was looking and I said, okay, where do I get this? And it popped up in my search and I go on, what the heck? With a little bit different version of that word. It's Windows, It's Windows. What can I do? Okay, so I did it and it worked and it was like
then the thing when it doesn't work, you end up erasing the drive and reinstalling. So sometimes it's easier just to start there.
Yeah, just start there and you're done.
Right, exactly. If it didn't work, I'd say, that's Windows.
Yeah. Right. Well, on your home computer where it's an annoyance, that's one thing, but on your business computer where you're down and your business is stopped, you might want to get faster.
Absolutely. If I had a business that relied on it, I'd just buy another computer and set it next to it and start from there. But
We have so many people that bring their computer into the shop, and how soon can they get it back? It's my only business computer. You should have another computer.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
I used to get that, and a woman was saying, well, my kids play on it.
Yeah.
Then it's not a business computer.
Yeah. She goes, why can't stop it? I get home and I'm fixing dinner and they get on it and start playing.
Why do they have your password? Yeah.
Or why don't you have a password?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or tell the kids no.
Killed it for her was, because she came in like 3 different times within a month. And, I finally, the third time she comes in, this is ridiculous. I shouldn't have to pay. I said, no, you don't have to. Have your kids. Yeah. They want to play on it and mess it up. Then have them pay for your mistake. Well, you shouldn't be charging me. How is it my mistake that you're letting your kids on your work computer and messing it up?
And using things like LimeWire and BearShare and downloading all this stuff that from who knows where. All right.
I would think after 3 times at the shop, she probably paid enough that she could have bought a second computer just for them.
Well, exactly.
Believe it or not, that's what she wound up doing is buying a cheapo used laptop to do it.
There you go.
Yep.
Leave mine alone.
Yep, exactly right.
All right. I just wanted to, share that I did do what Steve had said, and it worked fine, and it should work for the other caller that was having that same error message. I kept repeatedly, and I'm going, what do I do? Do I leave it to the old version?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's one for me. Write that down.
Write that down. All right. Thanks, Fred.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Al, I'm sure you're still listening, and if you're not, the heck with you. I'm sure you're still listening, there's an answer.
I read a story similar to that where a woman called up a appliance repair shop. So my dishwasher's broken. And they said, all right, we'll have somebody out in about 3 days. 3 days? What am I supposed to do? I've got 3 kids. All the dirty dishes are piling up. And they said, sounds like you've got 3 dishwashers.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, how dare you? Slave labor, I can't do that.
Yeah. Well, then put up with the dirty dishes.
If I suggested not doing the dishes,
paper
my
plates.
Mother was Italian.
Yep.
I would be minus an I, at least.
My father had to load the dishwasher. He wouldn't let Mom do it.
Well,
he only knew how to do it right.
There's the how to load the dishwasher manual is about this thick.
Yeah.
So, I get that. All right.
One thing before you read another news article, I got to remind folks that next Saturday is going to be our Rumball show since, Christmas is on a Wednesday?
Thursday. I think so, something like that.
Thursday.
Thursday.
All right, so since...
Because we can't get Friday and Saturday off. Retail sucks.
Yeah, tell me about it. So, yeah,
well,
so...
you're going to take Friday off the 26th, right?
No.
No.
Day after Christmas is returns.
Oh, Jackie. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, never mind. Even, Jackie, you're right. Make
even,
it work.
Yeah, even where I work.
All the retail stores, yeah.
We're the only days that we are literally closed is Christmas and Thanksgiving Day.
See, this is why I loved working in a bank.
Banking holidays,
or in academia. We've got most of December and January off. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Well, so I went to a Christian college.
Sure.
That was non-denominational by then, but it was Christian college. And so we got the Christian holidays off.
Right.
My friends that went to the state school got the Jewish holidays off, too. And I'm thinking, when do we get the Muslim holidays off?
Right, never, unfortunately.
And the Druish holidays off. And funny, she doesn't look Druish.
She doesn't look Druish.
Oh, they finished wrapping on Spaceballs 2, or finished filming and wrapped. And
right.
Now we got to wait for editing.
The search for more money.
Yep.
So next Saturday's show will be our official, our traditional, I should say.
Right.
Rumble show. Yep.
Rumble show. So everybody get prepared to join us.
Nick during the break, by dinner time tonight, they will be in the refrigerator fermenting for the rest of the week.
Very nice.
So by Friday night, they'll be rolled and ready to bring in and enjoy.
Very nice. All right. Android is under attack. Google issued a warning on December 1st, along with what is essentially an emergency update. We reported on that last week. In fact, I think it was the poll. This emergency update was pushed out to all Pixel users, but for Samsung users, these fixes are not yet available despite attacks now underway. While Pixel fixes are created by Google, Samsung bears responsibility for changing an update cycle that still runs a full month to deploy critical fixes to its user base. And it bears responsibility for the lack of seamless updates on all but the Galaxy S25 and one random mid-range phone. Samsung is rolling out a software update to the Galaxy S25, S25 Plus, and the Galaxy S25 Ultra in its home country, South Korea. We expect Samsung to offer the update in other regions around the world in the next few days, but not everyone everywhere. This is just not how it works with Samsung. Keep checking your settings for updates. And don't blame Google. They've released the update on the 1st. Google has released emergency updates to fix another Chrome zero-day vulnerability exploited in the wild, marking the 8th such security flaw patch since the start of the year. They fixed this high-severity vulnerability for users in the stable desktop channel, with new versions rolling out worldwide to Windows, Mac OS, and Linux users. So make sure your Chrome browser is up to date. If you're using a different Chromium-based browser like Brave or Edge, keep checking. On Tuesday, Google Photos announced the launch of new features aimed at making video editing and highlight reel creation easier. This includes specialized templates with preset music and text overlays, as well as a redesigned video editor. The new templates are currently rolling out to Android devices and allow users to choose from preset music and text to produce a professional-looking highlight reel in seconds. Users simply select a template, then handpick the photos and videos they want to add. Google Photos will automatically generate a video that aligns to the beat of the music. Google says the redesigned editor will now serve as the default video editing tool on Android. A newly discovered Android malware, Double Droid Lock, can lock victim screens for ransom and access text messages, call logs, contacts, audio recordings, or even erase data. Droid Lock allows its operator to take complete control of the device via the VNC sharing system and can steal the device lock pattern by placing an overlay on the screen. Right now, the malware seems to be targeting Spanish-speaking users and is distributed through malicious websites promoting fake applications that impersonate legitimate packages. But escalation is likely soon. Look out for an update and be suspicious of anything you get from someone you may not know or anything you get from someone you do know but weren't expecting. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition, but pretty much everybody expects us. So you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. You know, I get notices all the time of problems with this operating system or that operating system, and it's only in this one region of the country. And I sometimes think there's no point in us. We may have one or two listeners in that area. They probably heard it somewhere else. But then again, I think, okay, it started in that region.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when it is successful in that region, it's going to spread like wildfire.
Yep.
So we should let everybody know. And in general, you shouldn't be downloading stuff from people you don't know. You shouldn't be downloading stuff from places you don't know. And you should be suspicious of anything you get from somebody you do know that you weren't expecting.
Especially right now during the holidays. The internet is literally flooded with fake mm-hmm. stuff.
And the holiday bump up in fake shipping scams. Hi, this is UPS. We can't deliver your package. Give us the tracking number and we'll figure out what to do. They have the tracking number.
Yeah, they don't need your tracking
number. How did
they call you and know it was your package if they don't have a tracking number?
Once you give the bad guy your tracking number, they can call UPS and say, can you deliver this somewhere else, please?
Yeah, right. We would like it drop shipped to this address.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see that news story of an Amazon van was found abandoned full of packages?
Full of packages is a surprising part.
On a snowmobile trail.
Wow.
So the theory is, the reports, I think it was happened yesterday, that the Amazon driver followed the GPS instructions too closely.
Yeah.
And drove down a snowmobile track and got stuck and just left rather than trying to call dispatch, because we've heard horrible stories about what Amazon does to their drivers.
Oh yeah.
You can't even stop to go to the bathroom because it's rated against your delivery times.
Right.
So I guess if you just leave, then they can.
The motorman's friend.
Yeah.
Look it up. The motorman's friend.
Yeah.
Don't get one, but you can look them up. I knew a long distance trucker who had one. And that's not neither here nor there, but one of the reasons that these people have so much money is they work their workers hard,
mm-hmm.
and that's an understandable thing, I guess, from their point of view. I don't see it, but okay,
exploit some of their weaknesses.
Yeah.
Well, and the rebuttal is always, well, if you don't like it, get another job.
Right.
All the jobs are like that.
UPS used to at least bid for their routes
mm-hmm.
in terms of time. I can do that route in 3 hours.
Yeah.
I can do it in 2 hours and 40 minutes sort of thing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go too far, because we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I love a walking bass. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Okay, time for miscellaneous news. Big tech has spent the last year telling us we're living in the era of AI agents, but most of what we've been promised is still theoretical. A group of major AI players, including Anthropic, Block, and OpenAI, have come together to promote interoperability with the newly formed Agentic AI Foundation, or AAIF. Isn't there a
audio interchange file format?
Maybe it's AAF. AAFI? That doesn't matter.
so many acronyms.
Yeah, this move elevates a handful of popular technologies and could make them the de facto standard for AI development going forward. In addition to Apple and Google joining forces to make switching platforms easier, they've issued a joint cyber threat notification to users around the world. This is mercenary commercial spyware targeting new vulnerabilities in both iOS and Android to target specific individuals with sophisticated attacks. So again, keep watching for updates on both iOS and Android phones. And if you're not on the latest version of the OS, get there. This is when Apple and Google work together.
That's unusual.
You know there's an issue. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, God bless them, on Tuesday added a security flaw impacting the WinRAR file archiver and compression utility to its known exploited vulnerabilities catalog. Citing evidence of active exploitation. The vulnerability could enable code execution. However, for exploitation to succeed, it requires a prospective target to visit a malicious page or open a malicious file. So as always, be very suspicious of what you're being asked to click on. You should note that this vulnerability, of course, only affects Windows versions of WinRAR. Versions of the tool for other platforms are not affected. Microsoft had an incident that blocked users in Europe from accessing the company's AI-powered Copilot digital assistant. Shockingly, some people thought this was a problem. The outage affected users in the United Kingdom or Europe who couldn't access copilot.cloud.microsoft, m365.cloud.microsoft, the Copilot button with the Edge Explorer, or Microsoft Copilot for Microsoft 365 apps. While some considered this a feature, not a bug, Microsoft has fixed it. Microsoft also tracked a separate incident causing some admins to experience errors when accessing Microsoft Defender for endpoint features, including device inventory and threat analysis. Speaking of vulnerabilities in their code, which we do often, Microsoft now pays security researchers for finding critical vulnerabilities in any of its online services, regardless of whether the code was written by Microsoft or a third party. This policy shift was announced at Black Hat Europe on Wednesday. Attackers don't distinguish between Microsoft code and third-party components when exploiting vulnerabilities, prompting the company to expand its bug bounty program to cover all Microsoft online services by default with all new services in scope as soon as they are released. Apparently, nobody's paying us, but you can still give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415.
Yeah, if you're good enough, you can make a really, really decent living finding computer bugs.
Yeah.
So Microsoft up to $100,000 for cloud bugs, $250,000 for on-prem programs.
Google does it. Apple does it.
A lot of people have been complaining about Apple's bug bounties are lower than norm.
Yep.
And they tend to reclassify. This guy recently was really mad at Apple. He found a critical bug that should be paid $100,000, and they redefined it as a severe bug and only paid him $10,000 or something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not like Apple doesn't have some money.
Yep.
They could reach into the couch cushions and give the guy $100,000.
Yep. And the competition is a commercial company like Zerodium. They're bad guys that buy exploits. I think for an iPhone, exploits is $1 million.
Right.
And then they sell it to other bad guys.
Right.
There are, so for smaller companies that don't have their own bug bounty program, there are, I guess, bug bounty parent companies. HackerOne is one of them, where smaller companies use them to help track and pay for bug bounties.
Yep. And that's only good for the industry. And I'm sure there are those of you sitting out there shouting at the radio right now, it's because Apple doesn't have bugs. Yeah, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, they do. And
someone is going to find your bugs.
That's right.
Do you want it to be the good guys or the bad guys?
That's exactly right. Every operating system has bugs. Somebody's going to find them. And places like Google and Microsoft pay enough that they tend to get the fixes first.
Mm-hmm.
Apple does not, and it's that simple. In the Linux side, of course, people make the fixes for free.
Usually the person that finds the bug fixes it and then releases them both at the same time.
Well, yep. Here's the bug and here's the fix. Move on.
The thing of it is, though, is between PC and Mac, they're playing the percentages.
Mm-hmm.
And right. There's more PCs out in the business world now than there are Macs. Back in the day, you know, Mac used to be in the school systems and everything else. Those have been all taken over by Chromebooks.
Yeah. Well, and Apple offers bounties of up to $5 million. But
doesn't mean they pay it. They just offer it.
Yeah. I read one the other day with a zero-day exploit that they said was very easy to exploit because all it did was require a user to type a terminal command.
Right.
And I'm thinking, how often do users type terminal commands? Really? That's I can get some user to type any random command into the terminal?
Sometimes you can, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Wow.
But one of the things that the industry, the bad guy industry, has said is that it is easier to get Apple people to do stuff because Apple people don't think they can be harmed.
Mm-hmm.
True.
And so they're actually easier to fool. You know, a Windows person doesn't want to touch their machine at all.
Mm-hmm.
They breathe on it wrong and it blue screens.
Because they know even just a simple update can brick their machine.
Right.
There was a recent GRC episode. I'm looking for it now. Apple added something to their Apple Silicon architecture to prevent memory buffer problems, overflows, right. underflows, that should eliminate any overflow error.
Right.
Which is like 90% of the beginning of all bugs.
Right.
ARM has got so they've been working on this for several years, and the ARM standard does one thing, and Apple went a little beyond that to do something else. The ARM standard offered protection that would tell the programmer you did had an out of bounds error,
right?
But it didn't happen in real time,
right.
And Apple added it to real time in their chips for all the Apple Silicon chips, which should virtually eliminate that type of error. Yeah. And what we've been they've been reading about it too is that a lot of the people who look for bugs have stopped looking at especially iPhone bugs because all the low hanging fruit has already been picked.
Right.
So now it's only super hard and super esoteric bugs that they'll find. So right. Yeah, we'll go over to Windows where the bugs are easier to find. Microsoft just released 50 patches.
56 patches. This month.
And that was low for a monthly patch. Only 50.
Yeah. It really is. Look, every operating system has issues. We do all understand that. We pick on Microsoft for a couple of reasons. One, they have a lot of them. Two, they only update once a month, which means there's 30 days on average.
There it is.
Where you could easily get hacked.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is they could afford to kill those bugs daily, hourly, minutely if they wanted to. And they don't. And that.
Because that might upset their enterprise customers because they have to test all the updates before it goes out.
Again, but, playing the percentages.
But even so, I should have the option to say, let me install this now.
Yep.
And then if I'm a systems administrator, then I can get one of my minions, a trusted minion. No, I'll probably do it myself. Okay. to look at that stuff. And maybe I do that every Monday morning.
Yep.
Yeah.
I sit down, you know, then I'm a week out, not a month out. I'm still ahead of the game by 3 weeks.
And a lot of them will sit there. If they know the exploit, they'll wait to see what updates are done.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've been working on something totally different, they wait for the update to come out, and then an hour later, bam, they got it out there. So now they've got, like you said, close to a full 30 days to even hope that they attack it.
Steve has said this before. It's twice you're right in the same hour,
wow.
In the same show.
Whoa.
That, you know, Patch Tuesday is followed by Exploit Wednesday. And that's the way it works.
If it's even that long.
Right.
Yeah. Apple is calling this memory integrity enforcement. And it's an extension to the enhanced memory tagging extension released in 2022, which itself is an extension to the memory tagging extension in 2019. So we're hoping they're going to add this back to ARM because Apple Silicon is based on ARM. But Gibson said he doesn't think Google's going to bother in putting it into their chips because it's such a huge engineering effort.
Yeah, it is a huge engineering effort.
Mm-hmm. And it's easier just to fix the bugs as they find them.
Yep. We'll see what happens with that. But it's I don't know. It just strikes me it makes me angry. They have the technology. They have the money. They could hire the people to do the job.
Think of it as though, yeah, they have money. But they also have shareholders.
Well, and that's
where the, you know. Do I make my shareholders happier?
Yeah.
Or do I fix this and spend some of their money?
They have a fiduciary responsibility to maximize
profits. That balancing act is, like you've said before, you know, we're just the beta testers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're
the product.
Yeah. And, you know, to how much we're going to help them create a profit for their shareholders.
Right. Well, you're the product. I don't run Windows.
Yeah.
Actually, I still do have a Windows laptop. Don't know why. Honestly,
you got to do a class, and then you said the class was canceled, right?
No. I'm writing a book, and I've finished that chapter, so I don't know why it's still there.
Because you still might need it.
It's easier than moving it away.
Two things. Well, for my birthday, a friend of mine gave me a really nice Star Trek metal sculpture to put together,
ooh.
And that I've been promising myself that would be the reward for finishing the book. I keep updating the book. I may just do the thing anyway, just because I want.
Without
to.
An editor, you don't have to feel pressure to.
Well, I don't have a deadline. That's exactly right. Yeah. I haven't made a deadline.
Did
because
you
I can
hear?
Always say I can always fix this. I can always change that.
What was his name? The you remember the movie 47 Ronin?
Sure.
That was a really good movie. Well, Netflix apparently gave the director $11 million to make the next movie. He went and spent it on Ferraris and Rolls Royces and parties and yacht trips, and now he's been arrested. that wasn't a play with money. That was make the movie money.
Right. I don't get some people, and I don't get me. I don't know why I haven't finished that book. I've gotten involved in all this. Life has happened, and I get that's a large part of it.
Perfect is the enemy of good enough. It's good enough. It's good enough. No, it could be perfect.
That is the truth, and I am a big fan of good enough for government work. But I have been, you're right, I have been perfecting this book for too long, and I just have to stop and bite the bullet. You know, sometimes it's what was that movie 80 some odd hours where the guy cut off his arm to get out of the hole? I just need to get out my pocket
days.
Knife and go. There's I got to do it. I just got to do it. I just got to do it. So we'll see.
But like we say constantly, you know, all good wills and intentions, but life gets in the way and things pop up that you, even if you get into it, all of a sudden you've got to stop for this emergency or that thing in life that you got to continue doing.
Yep. So we'll see. We'll see what the next few weeks bring in terms of that.
127 hours.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing, too. If you put too much pressure on you, I think you can almost talk yourself out of it.
Well, exactly. You know, there comes a point, though, which you have to say, all right, it's laid fallow long enough.
Yeah, but...
I've let it lie fallow long enough. It's time for me to move on with it. So I get it. So we'll see. The problem is, yesterday I was thinking about it, and I thought, you know what? I really should change the entire way I wrote it.
Reinvent the wheel, folks.
Yeah, redo the whole thing.
Feed it to ChatGPT and ask it what you could do better.
Oh, that'd be... Boom.
I told you, when I first wrote the book, I did the outline. I did my chapter outlines. And then I said to ChatGPT... and to Gemini and to a couple of others, here's the premise of the book,
mm-hmm.
Write an outline. And each of them came up with one thing I hadn't thought of,
okay,
which was kind of nice.
Yeah.
But more importantly, none of them came up with anything major. You know, so I did it right the first time, or at least I did it as well as AI, for whatever that says for that. But we'll see. I have... The book is written. I just have to go back and finish editing it. I've edited the chapter on Weasel, the Windows subsystem for Linux, WSL, which apparently people pronounce Weasel. I just have to go back and do the rest of it now. We'll see.
See, too bad you weren't still at RIT, and you could have one of your minions do that.
I know. I could just give this to one of my minions and say, tell me, you know, edit this for me.
Yeah. That way you're getting an actual outsider's view of it and understanding, because that's the whole problem with programmers and manual writers. They are two different worlds. The programmer has it in his head how it should do it, but then when you're trying to get somebody that's writing the manual to explain what's to be done, they're worlds apart.
Minionsforhire.com.
Is there such a place?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. But it's the movie Minions.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, thank you.
If I can get one of those to read my book for me.
Make about as much sense, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that yes. And I have to buckle down and do it.
There's another one called Big Yellow Character to hire for a kid's birthday party. No trademark infringement.
For kids' my minions for hire for a birthday party. Yeah. Of course.
What do you think they were hired for?
I hired minions to do work at where I worked.
Yes. Yep.
The students who worked for me were my minions.
And that movie series has ruined Minions.
Well, and this was long before the movie
minions
series.
Minions were everywhere.
In those days, minions meant a disciple of the devil. They're people who work for the devil. That's a minion. I just have to finish the book. I just have to finish it. And you're right. You know, it's easy to write a book. It's hard to. And the reason I put it away to begin with, as I said, I wanted it to lie fallow for a while, so my brain, because, you know, you wrote it, and every single line is your favorite child.
Oh, yeah.
So you go back to look at it, and you think, no, this is perfect. So you have to kind of put it away for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think I put it away a little too long. So I'll go back and look at it now with a completely pure eye.
New perspective.
Right. It's like somebody else wrote the thing. The old me wrote it. Past me. So we'll see. I'll work on that. Speaking of programming, I added an important link to the some important links on our website at soundbites.org. It's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. It's called Why and Why Not Linux. This is a question I get all the time. You know, what do I get from Linux? What do I not get from Linux? So just yesterday, I just put together a real quick set of bullet points for some of the things that you get and don't get. What prompted this was I was reading a message from the guy who created Linux Mint. It's a French name. Seems to have a British accent, but I forget his name. But they were asking him why there's no AI in it. And he said, look, basically, the idea behind Linux Mint is it's fast and it's easy and it's convenient. If you want to put an AI agent in it, go ahead. I'm not going to force you to. This is Linux. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to force you to. Nobody's going to make you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to add one? Knock yourself out.
You're
you don't want to
control.
Add one? Here it is. You're in control. So, and that made me think. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of reasons why you would or wouldn't run. You know what you do and don't get in Linux.
Clement Lefebvre.
Yeah.
And I know I mispronounced that.
Right.
There's like four accents in his name.
Right, and he pronounces his name so fast in the video that I watched, it was like, okay. My wife, when she was still a student at RIT, at Nazareth College, spent a year in France, and she lived in Rennes, which apparently they pronounced
Rennes.
Yeah. And when she was there, I would call her once a month for 5 minutes, because I was an out-of-work actor, and it was $5 a minute.
Remember long-distance telephone rates?
Under long-distance telephone rates.
And after 11, you called her?
Oh, well, yeah.
No, probably not, because that was like 3 in the morning in France.
I didn't care. So I would call her, and the only French phrase I knew was Je veux parler avec Alain, s'il vous plaît, which apparently over the international wire sounded a lot like May I please speak to Elaine. Most of the time I would get, phone down. I'm listening to the transatlantic cable at $5 a minute while they go find Elaine. Every once in a while, they go, and they would leave and nothing would happen forever, like hours at a time. And then the lady upstairs who spoke like four words of English would come down and say, Elaine, not here. Call later. I got that 5 minutes ago. Thank you so much. I don't mind paying for that. So, yeah. So I do not speak French, one of the very many languages I don't speak. I'm an American. We just shout louder until you get it. But, so his name is, yeah, something, La Febre, something. He's right. It's, you know, the idea behind most versions of Linux is simplicity, ease of use, and the ability to do what you want, when you want it, how you want it. And ease and simplicity and freedom are the cornerstones of Linux. So I guess that makes Linux a pyramid.
Yeah.
It's three cornerstones, I guess. Although real pyramids have four. Look, I get it. I know. All right. That's it. We are done for another week. I guess that makes it an obelisk or a stele. No steles. Look, it doesn't matter. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. Good questions this week. Hard questions this week. And that's the way we like them. We can't answer them, but we like them that way. Thank everybody who called in. Please remember to vote in the poll. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe on our YouTube channel. And we're done for another week. We've got the Rumball episode coming up next week. If you've got any ideas for quick and easy last-minute gifts for the computer geek in your life, please feel free to call in next week and tell us what it is. But we're done for another week. You've been listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?